That was different music, because you know why? Because it's Love Babs, Love Talking. This is a talking show. I'm not playing any, I'm not spinning any music today. I'm talking. And guess who I'm talking to? I'm talking to Robert Scheinman.
Hey, Bab.
Hi. He's the executive director of the Whitneyville Art Center in Hamden. I think you're my first Hamden guest.
Oh, yeah. The New Haven Independent doesn't get out to Hamden very much.
I know. But they're trying to be wooed to Hamden.
We want the New Haven Independent very badly.
I know. You know what they say, money screams. That's all I'm saying. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
So I met Robert Scheinman. We were at this cool dinner party a couple of weeks back.
Yes.
Claudia Rankin and her husband John Lucas threw this eclectic dinner party. Good morning, Harry. And so we were all there. It was a bunch of all kinds of interesting people.
Oh, yeah.
You, me, Hanifa, Andrew Carter.
Clark? Carter?
Andrew Carter. Oh, Andrew Clark. Oh, sorry if he's listening.
I don't know. I think it was Clark. I looked him
yes,
up.
Yes, no, it's Clark. Andrew Clark.
Yeah.
Zelda.
Yeah.
And her boyfriend, the Juice Mogul guy.
Yes.
I'm just calling him the Juice Mogul guy.
That's a good name for him.
The Juice Box guy.
He's leading the way with Juice Box.
Yes, he's leading the way up there on Upper Chapel Street. But Zelda is interesting, so she's going to come on, too, to talk about her thing.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to talk about her thing because she's not letting me talk about her thing.
Okay. It's a secret until she
But Zelda
it.
Works at Dwight Hall. She's a very interesting, accomplished woman. But I can't talk about her thing until it launches, so I'm not going to talk about her thing. So if you're listening, Zelda, your secret is still safe with me. But I'm here with Robert Scheinman, who is executive director of the Whitneyville
Cultural Commons.
I call it the Art Center. I don't know what.
There's a Whitney Art Center, too, but that's still in New Haven. The Whitneyville Cultural Commons is a little bit further out.
Oh, then I need to clean that up when, Harry cleaned it up.
Yeah.
Whitneyville Cultural Commons. Okay, so I'm sitting next to you at the dinner party, and we're drinking good-ass scotch.
Yeah, and a little bit of mezcal.
And a little bit of
John's got some taste.
I'm like, John, if you're listening, you know, you could make that a thing. You could just make that a thing. And you could shoot that and be like the John Lucas dinner party.
Oh, yeah.
And that'd be cool. And you have interesting conversation. I'm gonna poach that to him. I'm gonna pitch that to him. Like, listen, you should do this. And I'd be the guest always.
Yes.
Like, I'd always be there. Like, I'd be the only one that wouldn't be rotated out.
Would you have a chair with your name on it?
Yes. So, are you from here?
Pretty much. We moved to Hamden when I started high school. So when I was 14, which is like over 20 years ago now. And
okay.
I left and come back and left and come back. But New Haven's, Hamden, they're both home.
So tell me about this Whitneyville Cultural Commons. Because it was a church. It was a congregational church since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful space.
Yeah.
And then it was, I guess, left to its own.
So like 4 years ago, the church ran out of money. And so quickly that they couldn't even pay the heating bill. And one of the members of the church and her husband, that's Jennifer Brocious and Lane Harris, they stepped in to buy the church with the idea of sort of reopening it as a community center and
because Hamden had a need of that?
Yeah, because our mayor said yesterday that we need more community centers in town, so it must be
true. Really?
Yeah. Posted it on the web and everything.
Wow.
It seemed like the neighborhood would be served as it. The church house, the building that the church built behind the church, mm-hmm. used to act as the community center for Whitneyville.
Yes.
When it was really active mm-hmm. through like 1924 to 2000.
Okay. And so, all right. So they say, we're going to do this thing.
Yeah.
And then they do an executive director search?
No. So Lane and I go back. He was a friend of mine that we'd worked together on some projects.
Oh, so you got a hookup.
I did get a hookup. I was wandering the country looking for a public library to take over to do this same thing. I wanted to start a community resource center, sort of reinvent the public library for the 21st century. And while I was traveling, Lane got the chance to buy the church. And I found out and I asked him if I could come back and work on the project with him.
Wow.
And so that was 2014. We started renovations, and then the sale finally went through in September of 2014.
So what was the initial vision?
The initial vision was to. That's a good question. It's a little complicated because there were competing visions, and the final what is existing now is sort of an organic development of these different visions. We just wanted to make a space that was accessible and reopen the building for use for everyone who could possibly find a use for it mm-hmm. in the neighborhood and across Greater New Haven.
So now did you hold meetings? Because in New Haven, you can't do a daggone thing without 100 meetings in a community. Which is not, I'm not mocking that. That's a good thing.
It's great to have community input. We did have meetings with people in the beginning. Mm-hmm. We also just, there was a lot of renovations to do. It hadn't really been taken care of since the 70s. So there was like carpet in the old building. Ooh. And there was, yeah, and the walls needed to be painted. So there was just 6 months of work. Mm-hmm. And the doors were open and we had a sign out saying we were working. And people just started stopping in and asking what was going on and what could be done there. And many of the people who are there now, CEIO, which does the Deeper Change forums. Mm-hmm. They've got one coming up tomorrow at the Unitarian Society up on Hartford Turnpike with Ruby Sales.
I know Ruby Sales.
Yeah, that's going to be big. They'll be coming back to the WCC afterwards, but Ruby needed some special arrangements for accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
Neonu, who runs that organization, just walked in the front door and was like, I have this need for a space to put on Deeper Change forums. Can we do it here? And they've been there ever since. So that's so much of how everything just started
mm-hmm.
with these people having needs for space, for sound equipment, for an environment that was inclusive and productive to these sorts of activities.
Okay, that's interesting. And it's kind of a co-working space.
It is.
Well, co-working is like a loaded term now, but a place where people, if you don't want to be working at home
yeah.
and you want to go someplace where you can be creative and work and be around other creative working people.
Right.
This is a place for you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we've got a lot of private offices, which are mostly filled now, filled with various organizations, all who make use of the sort of the campus life, the fact that we have all of these meeting rooms in these big halls. And then we have a bunch of individual people who either have desks that they rent from us or they just hang out during the day, use their laptop and then
leave. I have to come and see this space.
Yeah, it's really pretty if you haven't been there.
I've been there for the Compassion Festival.
The Vegan Holiday
Bazaar. The Vegan Holiday Bazaar
yeah.
thing.
And then you saw the lights all up and that yeah. beautiful yellow that's on everything.
But, you know, I like to see it without all of that.
Yeah.
Because I can't see the space. I enjoyed going there, but I was there to see the vegan folks.
Right.
So I couldn't really see the space, but I'm going to come and check it out.
Oh, anytime you want a tour, you just let me know. Go through the whole place.
So tell me about your day-to-day life. What do you do? What's your day-to-day life there?
Yeah. So weekends are almost always filled with events.
What kind of events? Like what can people do there?
So people have baby showers.
I know. The Winfields had a baby yeah. shower, which I missed. I was invited, but I didn't get to go.
Yeah. A week ago.
Almost. Yes.
So we have events like that, bridal showers, baby showers, birthday parties, socially significant occasions, you know, things that used to happen in churches. Mm-hmm. That used to be where everyone went and had their child's birthday party and with their community.
Yeah.
And so we have space for all of that again, all sorts of assembly and civic activities. If people need space for like organizing an activist community in their neighborhood, they can come use space there. Anything from 3 people all the way up to 300 people.
Now, is the church part of it?
Yes.
Available too?
Yeah. We own the whole property. So the Whitneyville Cultural Commons is now a 501c3 nonprofit and mm-hmm. has purchased the property from Lane after the renovations were done.
Oh.
Yeah. So the nonprofit owns everything now and manages it and is ensuring for the long term that it stays as public space. I mean, that's the final idea, is that it is a placemaking activity. Public space is really important for civic and neighborhood life, and the Whitneyville Cultural Commons is going to ensure this property remains public space as a whole, and hopefully some other properties in the future.
Really?
Yeah.
So there's some expansion thinking going on?
Oh, yeah. The idea is to prove a model for self-sustaining community resource centers.
Now, that brings me to my next question. So how do you fund all this? Do you have to grant? You have to raise money? You're fundraising?
So
what do you do?
I just did my annual report yesterday, 2 days ago, with the board of directors, going over the finances for the last year. And we made $155,000 in revenue for 2017. $5,000 of that was grants and donations.
Really?
Everything's program services.
So do you set a budget every year? Does that fall where you want to be? Or does it give you less or more what you anticipated for the year? Because that's a lot of money. So I'm just trying to...
So that was close to... That was what needed to happen. That was the lowest we could have raised for revenue and have stayed afloat, made our mortgage payments.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Paid staff.
Okay.
And taken care of everything.
And how big is your staff?
Our staff is 1.5 now. I have somebody who helps me take care of the property and helps with events and stuff, but it's just me.
Okay.
I understand.
I've been the lone wolf in organizations.
Yeah, that's an experience.
Okay. All right, so on any given day, there's all kinds of activities going on.
Yeah, so we open, so weekdays, we open at like 7 a.m. for our coworkers.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, they
really?
Come in. Yep. 7 a.m. to 6 p.m., Monday through Friday, the space is open to everybody who's co-working there. Sometimes we have events going on during the week, and sort of co-working and events take place at the same time and share the buildings. But the majority of the time, weekdays are just for co-working.
So say if I want to go and co-work, what do I do?
So you give us a call or stop in. Usually between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m., I'm there to talk to people and give them tours and get them set up. You can send me an email, and then we can get everything set up that way. And I'll show you where, like, the communal spaces are, where the kitchen is that you're free to use to have some food or make some coffee. Coffee and tea are always available. And then we introduce you to the people who are around for the day, and you find a place to get comfortable, and you just start working, hang out.
Get out of here.
It's as simple as that.
Really?
Yep.
Wow, this is the coolest thing. This, you know, we have a space. We have a couple of spaces here in New Haven, the Grove.
Yeah.
And that is a co-working space,
and
which
they're
is
fantastic.
A cool,
yeah.
cool space. I don't get to utilize them as much as I want, but that's whole co-working. I went to a co-working space in Stanford, I think.
Yeah. Stanford Innovation Center.
Yeah. I thought, it was real cool in there. So I was like, okay, this is cool. So co-working space seems to be on the rise.
Yeah.
People are moving away from home offices.
Right. And moving away from private offices where there's no one else there, right?
Oh, yeah. And it's nice to sort of be in community.
Right.
Even if you're not like missions.
Right.
You know,
so I feel very lucky because we are filling the place up with people who are of like mission.
Really?
Yeah. People who care about social justice. The theme behind being a community resource center is that having these public property, having this public property that's managed for the good, is a way to create flourishing and to give people the resources they need to enact social justice.
So what will you do if, say, anti-social justice people show up?
So
have you had that experience?
Yeah, we have had that
no.
experience.
No. Oh, yeah. I was just making that up.
It's happened. And we're developing more and more policy as it happens more often. You know, it's hard to know what to do until you get your first test case. But the Red Cross is there every Friday doing a mobile blood drive. They're one of our partners and clients. And an older white man showed up wearing a white power shirt to... this and public allies were there at the same time, and there's a lot of black and brown kids in public allies.
I love public allies.
They're wonderful.
Allies. That's a Bill Graustein funded thing.
Yeah, they're amazing. I saw him walking up, and I was like, oh my god, what the hell are you doing here? What's going on? This is not okay. And So I asked him, I said, because he showed up really early, first and foremost, I said, until the Red Cross is open, you should probably not be on the property. And he just started to flip out on me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. He was like, you little punk, just started screaming and pointing, and then was like, you get out of my face. I'll blank you up. I'll screw you up.
Well, what was he? Was he coming to give blood?
Yeah. I don't know who he thought was going to get his blood. Is he going to play not for anyone but white people on it? What the hell? It makes no sense.
But, you know, it's a public space.
Yeah, it is.
And, you know.
So we talked about it afterwards. Mm-hmm. And what was one of the ways in which we came up with it, I also went to the director of Public Allies who was there at the time and asked her what she thought I should do. Because
they work on that kind of stuff, yeah. Right? Kind of. Yeah.
They're trying to include everyone and build unity and social justice in public service. I mean, that's, you can't ask for better than that.
Oh.
And so what we came up with is that I should ask him to turn his shirt inside out.
Oh, like you do it, like if at the polls.
Yeah.
If you wear somebody's, you can't go into the polls with somebody's brand on you. You got to turn it inside out or cover it.
Right.
Same thing.
And so if he's wearing hate speech, which he was wearing, that we've adopted that as our policy.
Wow.
Either turn the hate speech inside out so it's not visible, or we have a policy that there's no hate speech allowed on the property.
Oh, my gosh.
And then if you're engaging in hate speech, we're going to ask you to get off.
We're going to politely ask you to leave.
Yeah.
And if that don't work, we're going to call somebody. We're going to call Bobo and them.
Yeah.
This is an exciting job.
It has its moments, that's for certain. I'm learning what it's like to manage public space for everyone's interest.
I mean,
that's what it's about. It's like, how do we avoid the tragedy of the commons, yet actually make common resources?
Mm-hmm.
And not use and abuse those resources, but make sure they're available for everyone, especially for those who most need them, and prioritize their use and access.
So it must be an affordable membership.
Yeah.
Affordable, all kinds of levels depending on your needs.
Exactly.
So you could be there a day or a month or,
yep,
you know. And that makes sense. I mean, if you didn't want real office space where you have to pay so much money,
yeah,
this might be a good alternative for you.
Yeah. I mean, so right now, basic monthly co-working, $75 a month.
Oh, I like that.
That's all right,
right? Oh, I could do that.
Yeah.
Although I'm kind of funky about a Hamden address. Should I be funky about that?
It's a Whitney Ave address. Whitney Ave is like prime location for an address.
All right.
1253 Whitney Avenue.
I'm in New Haven, though. I'm a New Havener. Do you get that? Do you get the pushback?
Yeah, always.
I'm just giving you the pushback. Like,
what is the divide between our towns? One in every household in Hamden comes to New Haven for work every day.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Every day. Like, we're so economically intertwined. Our lives are intertwined. People come out to the space for music shows all the time.
Yeah.
And that's like,
some good bars in Hamden I frequent.
There's a number of them. Micro is great.
I haven't been there.
It's gotta
on my. All right, so we're gonna hang out. We're gonna go there.
Oh,
I've been trying to get
Micro
there. I have not gotten there yet. I mean, when they opened, I was all excited. I even sent them a message like, "Y'all got to have some non-dairy snacks." You know. Bar food.
Yeah, I think they do. I think they'll satisfy
you. I think they heard me.
Yeah. Some buffalo cauliflower.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, so you're right. New Haven and Hamden are so intertwined. And this might be a good way to sort of highlight that relationship by cross. You know, people can go up there. I may have to come and take a tour. I'm looking for some space to hang out for myself to work on top of all these other things that I'm doing. I need a legit space to be. So that might be a good place. So tell me about your background. Before you got here, what were you doing? Because you're a young man.
Okay, thanks. I don't feel that young anymore, but I appreciate that. So I dropped out of high school when I was 15.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah. I left school to go to homeschool, and then I immediately took my GED that same year and got my degree. I started working in restaurants first and foremost.
Really?
Yep. 15 years old, I worked at Louis Lunch. servant.
I think we had this conversation over scotch.
I think we did, yeah. And then I just started using work as a way to get an education. And so the internet had also come out. And so I could just read the internet and like learn all about the world. It wasn't so necessary.
Really?
To go
you had that kind of maturity.
Luckily, yes. It was my dad at the time was very opposed to me leaving school. I mean, he said, if you're going to do this, then you're in charge of your education. And for some reason, that really struck me as like I was responsible for educating myself.
Wow. See, your father was a good guy. Because yeah. I don't know if I could have. I told you, I have a daughter who is in the same. She's 15 and she wants to leave school and she's smart. And I was like, no.
I think it's a great experience.
And would you do it again?
Right now I would. Well, I'll tell you again in 10 years if I still feel that way. But
so
yeah.
Now, did you go to college? Did you yourself through college?
I tried. I've never completed college. I went when I was 18. For a year and didn't like it, so moved to Austin, Texas, and started managing a 24-hour restaurant right
really?
On UT campus. Yeah, I'd been working in restaurants for like 4 years. I mean, it was just an easy rise up through the restaurant. When I started as a waiter, they made me a manager.
So you didn't want to open your own restaurant. You want to do this thing.
Right. So I had a circuitous route. I used restaurants to get into sustainable agriculture.
Yeah. You need to be on the Common Ground board. Do you know Common Ground?
I do know Common Ground.
You should be on their board.
They come all the time for trainings at the WCC. So they're always in our facilities.
I'm on their board. I'm going to put your name in.
Thanks.
I'm going to have them contact you.
Yeah. So I went to a place called Polyface Farms, which is one of the premier sustainable animal husbandry farms in Connecticut. And I worked with them for a year, studying the way they designed their farm, how they were capturing carbon.
This is so fascinating, Robert. This is fascinating stuff.
Thanks. Yeah, it was. I just called them up one day and I was like, I'm in this cooking program and I got to go do an internship and you're the only place in the world I want to go to. And they were like, OK, let's make it happen. They never accepted anyone from the program before or after.
Oh, my God.
And I just got this chance to go on down there and live with them and work with them and become a member of the family. It was right. And then learn about agriculture firsthand. Like there was nothing like actually moving cows along pasture and seeing all the ways they had transformed the landscape, essentially terraformed this part of Virginia that they're in into the most fecund environment you've ever seen.
Did this experience change the way you eat? Did you eat meat? Did you give up eating meat for a period of time? Or
I have. My parents were both vegetarians when I was growing up. I had the resolution that if I was going to continue to eat meat, I needed to be able to slaughter myself, whatever I was going to
eat. Are you
eat.
Kidding me?
So one of the things that was happening at the farm was that I was learning to slaughter and butcher everything.
And what did that do for you?
It made me, so it's painful to slit the throats of animals or shoot a cow in the head because you're going to kill it.
Is that what you do?
Yeah. They draw a line between the horns and take a .22 and shoot a cow right in the forehead. And then it falls to the ground and flops. And then you hang it up and you take it apart.
So do you think if people knew this, that it would change more people's attitudes toward eating meat? Is this a moral issue? Should we be thinking about this morally?
So, man,
this is your own opinion.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't think we can have a sustainable agriculture system that produces enough compost, essentially, without utilizing animals within the design of it. It might be possible to only use worms to create a fecund enough agricultural system that we could feed everyone on the planet. But essentially, I don't think it's possible to produce enough vegetables without also dictating the lives of animals.
That's interesting.
And so if we're going to do that, animals are going to get old and they're going to die. We can give them the best life possible, which is what we should be doing. But we should probably also make as much use of the valuable resources that they happen to be once their lives are no longer going to serve the efficiency of that system.
Wow.
And I'm pretty just numbers-based about it.
Uh-huh.
It hurts to kill animals. I think people should have to bear the pain of the animals they eat because it's not good. Like, it's a sad thing to mm-hmm. even take a fish out of water and watch it die there. It's painful.
That's a very interesting sort of thought. I think we're very divorced from where food comes from. Any food.
Yeah.
I think we're very divorced Completely. From where food comes from and how it gets on our plates.
Yeah. So it was
I'm a chef by trade. So
you are too?
I am. I'm a chef by trade, and I haven't cooked in 30 years professionally. but I understand, because I know what it is to slaughter animals, because I've done it.
Yeah.
Right? I've seen it done. I've been a part of it. And I'm always struck by people's not understanding where their food comes from.
Yeah.
And so that's why I probably like Common Ground, because they process.
Yeah. They help to educate animals the kids about what it means to actually, yeah. you know.
Okay, so this is your background. You get out of the food yeah. managing
so
world.
I leave school to stay on the farm, and then I leave the farm to come back here to want to do urban agriculture. And this is before it was hip. So no one wanted to do it with me. And I wasn't willing to do it all alone completely. It's too hard to do that alone.
And so you were feeling like a lot of the stuff that we eat, we could grow ourselves and to be local and to know organic. And it was that your mindset? Were you feeling that?
I'm interested in the way in which our agricultural system can be made to actually work and not spew carbon into the atmosphere.
Oh.
And we have to close a lot of gaps, especially with how far we transport food waste, mm-hmm. if we're going to do that. And so the most effective way to have an agricultural system which is not producing excess carbon is to have a great portion of it, especially the back end of it, local. So where our food waste needs to be processed as locally as possible. And that's where, especially what I mean when I say animals are necessary to that process, they are the most effective way of processing food waste, is to actually have it go through animals' digestive tracts and turn Ooh. It into black gold, uh-huh. which is compost, okay. which is what we use to grow vegetables. And so if we're going to go through that process of designing an urban environment which will produce the resource we need to grow vegetables effectively, might as well grow vegetables there, because that will help create and design the environment the animals would live in.
So now, are you still connected to those roots?
So I am connected to the farm still. I talked to the owners of the farm, and I'm planning on going back there this year.
Because, you know, there's a whole food justice folks in New Haven.
Yeah. So I'm connected to them.
Are you? Okay.
Yeah. I believe that there's going to be one of the food policy council meetings coming up. Mm-hmm. And also food justice. I was at CT Core Organizer Now's last meeting at City Seed 2 weeks ago, not on Monday, this past one. That was in Bridgeport. And I'm hoping to support them in everything they do. And I'm hoping that the WCC can be an incubator for urban, suburban agriculture.
Wow.
I mean, one of the biggest wastes of spaces is our front yards all across suburban Connecticut.
You know, there's this, what's the guy out there in California who was in Compton, and he was turning his front yard into a viable, he's a wonderful brother. Yeah. I caught him on the TED Talks, and his name escapes me, darn it. And so he started taking over the city spaces, you know, like those, mm-hmm. you know, vacant lots.
Abandoned factories.
Abandoned places, and making it organic farming.
Yeah.
And, you know, the city was like mad and wanted him to stop doing it.
Yeah. There's a lot of regulation that needs to be gotten rid of so no one can stop doing that.
Like, so you think front lawns ought to be good places to?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. So just imagine across Connecticut. Everywhere you go.
I've seen it. I've seen it in places.
Yeah.
And I'm intrigued by it. And I've seen it where they would invite neighbors to come and like pick vegetables, because, you know, you grow a lot of stuff. You're not going to eat all of that.
Yeah.
You have neighbors, you know. And
so I would be even more business oriented around it. So what if we had a central processing station at a community resource center, and every lawn within a mile radius of that was rented, and then high cash horticultural crops were grown there? And you'd go out and you'd collect all of the lettuces and all of the tomatoes and sell them to local high-end restaurants, and then gather them all back at the WCC and process them to go to the restaurants. You create revenue for the people who live in those suburban area by renting their front lawn. And then you create jobs and you create a high quality cash crop that's locally needed, because we have tons of high quality restaurants in the urban centers in Connecticut.
We do. And, you know, at Common Ground funnels a lot of their produce to local restaurants.
Yeah.
You know, like Casey's and
New Haven Farms
places.
Does as
yeah.
well.
Yeah. 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 New Haven Farms.
All these places, they want that stuff. They don't want to have it shipped in from Virginia if they don't have to.
So, all right. So you're doing that and now you're doing this.
Yeah. And so I came back here and I couldn't get people interested in urban agriculture with me. So I went
back. You were
back
just ahead of your time.
I went back to work in restaurants for a while. And then I got a chance to do in-home assisted living for elderly people with psychiatric problems in hospice-like situations.
You remind me of me. We have all these different backgrounds that are just eclectic and rich. Yeah,
you know, life takes us in different directions. We gotta love it and embrace it.
But you're younger than I am. So I was like, all right, so you do that.
Yeah, I do
that. And
what
did you learn from that?
That we have basically abandoned the social contract as a nation and put people to their own devices, and we don't care what happens to the old, the sick, the young, anyone who's of color, anyone who's an immigrant, and that me getting paid $11 an hour to take care of one person is not going to fix that. And we need revolution so that we actually
put into
policy things that will take care of people.
You are absolutely right. So with that said, do you think politically about things?
Yeah.
Do you think about yourself in a political arena?
In ways, yeah. I mean, I don't know if I think of myself as being an elected official at some point in the future. I'm not opposed to that thought, but it's not the ways in which I think about how do we make change right here, right now as a community. I think about political will.
Okay.
How do we build political
will? That's my
will?
Favorite word, political will.
Yeah.
And I always tell people, if something is not happening, it's because of lack of political
Correct.
Will. And when you see things happening, it's because of political will.
So I think that's the biggest barrier to change. And all I want to do is create mechanisms by which political will can be built.
Okay. Now, do you miss restaurant life?
Oh, yeah. I miss dancing behind the stove.
No, seriously.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I miss cooking. I'm an intense person. I like that high-end lifestyle of, like, when everything is going 10,000 miles a minute and you're working, putting your arms through other people's arms to catch a hot plate or to toss a saute pan.
God, I used to like that 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I can't do it now. But I had that same, you know, when I was a culinary student, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of options the way they are now. Like, you could be celebrity and you could have a show, you could teach people how to cook, you could be a personal chef. So 30 years ago or 40 years ago, that just was not.
That revolution was happening when I was in cooking school.
Yeah.
And like all the other students were describing their weird plans. I was like, oh, I just wanted to cook. I just like food.
And so do you think you'll open your own restaurant? Is
no,
that a
not
thought?
Ever.
No.
No.
But you'd go work for somebody. No.
Oh, at that time when I was in school, I thought coffee shops were the embodiment of community spirit.
Well, they are. I think they are. Because they're doing some good stuff in New York, in the Hunts Point community. Yeah. You know, Majorca Carter was here. Majora Carter was here under the Arts and Ideas umbrella. And she was talking about what they did at Hunts Point around this one coffee shop.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Coffee.
I think they have been for a long time.
But now we have to move on or move up or move through. That can't be the only.
Starbucks is not going to be it, right?
Yeah.
They want to brand
But I don't think of Starbucks. I don't. I think the local. You know, I think Coffee Peddler. I think.
Right. So
second time around, I think, you know, the one that's next door to you. I think those kinds of places.
Yeah, I think they're important. I think something bigger. There needs to be more. Either they need to be renamed and rebranded, and they need to think of themselves as more than coffee shops that are hubs of community activity.
Yeah. Okay.
But they actually have to have stages. They have to be open forums. They have to, I mean, coffee, the warm, beautiful, energizing drink, is important to hold in our hands while we have good discussion.
Yeah.
But
coffee is the drink of revolutionaries.
Yeah.
I learned that in Jamaica because I was at a coffee plantation. And they were like, you know, you could tell the revolutionaries because they all drank coffee. They weren't drinking tea. So viva la coffee.
Long live the revolution.
So all of that brings you to this moment.
There's even more in between.
Oh, what? Ooh, tell me more.
So there's a place called Urban Miners. Have you heard of it?
No, I don't know Urban Miners.
So they're a waste management company that specializes in deconstruction rather than demolition.
Oh, I do know deconstruction.
Yeah.
You know why I know deconstruction? Because I used to run a program at the Housing Authority. And I learned about deconstruction because when the Housing Authority was starting to tear down their housing stock, old housing and dilapidated housing stock, I learned about deconstruction, that people would come in and take apart things and reuse it in other places.
Yep.
You know, like sinks and all kinds of
everything,
things that you
everything
could.
Everything they possibly could. Just take a building apart and separate it into its resource streams.
Yes. I know something about this. Recycle, remanufacture. Yes.
Compost or abatement. I mean, you're always going to have some toxic materials, but not everything is toxic. Not everything needs to be in a landfill.
No. I mean, sinks, tubs, fixtures, all kinds of things. Tiles. So I learned that. So I was a part of that. So, yeah.
So Urban Miners is a deconstruction company. And I went to work for them to sort of learn about sustainable waste management. And I wanted to find a way to incorporate that into the agriculture side of waste management that I'd been thinking about and studying.
Okay.
And so I spent probably 3 years doing that, learning about deconstruction, working and doing deconstruction, and then studying more about our waste management system in the U.S. as a whole and sort of why recycling has started to fail in the U.S. And, you know, China's just started refusing.
Is it failing? Do you think it's failing? I don't hear as much about it as I used to.
Right. So I think we have the single stream recycling program that everyone's a part of now. And so we think it's all working well.
Mm-hmm.
But almost everything, that 50% of what goes into single stream recycling ends up actually in a landfill. They have to separate that. And if things aren't separated enough, they just throw it in a landfill. And now what we used to think was working, we were shipping stuff to China, compressing all of these materials and shipping them away. China started refusing them. They're not taking any more of the world's trash that way. And so it's just filling up on the dock in New Haven right now. We have no idea what to do with it.
Oh, my Lord.
Yep. Hopefully it'll make us change and actually figure out how to deal with our waste. But
oh, my gosh. I did not know that. That's a little unsettling.
Uh-huh.
That's unsettling beyond I can't even tell you. Because what at some point it's going to become everybody's problem.
Yeah.
Like it's going to be bigger.
There's
going
to be trash everywhere.
Everywhere.
And we can't just ignore it anymore by putting it on poor people. And so thank God China's become richer and can refuse it. Because we need to actually deal with our waste and our problems.
Oh my God. Okay. I'm making a note to myself to think about that and look at that. So, and after that?
And after that, I spent a year trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life and wrote poetry most of that year and then decided I had an epiphany and decided that I wanted to create public resource centers. And I couldn't figure out where to do it, and there didn't seem like there was a lot of opportunity in New Haven. So I traveled around the country for a year looking for public libraries that were ripe to take over and do that in.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got that opportunity that brought me back here.
Okay. And so how long have you been there?
So we started in 2014. And so now it's 2018. And so it's 4 years now.
And that's a good chunk of time.
Yeah.
So what's your vision moving forward for it? I mean, is it where you want it to be?
Oh, it's, I mean,
has it surpassed your expectations?
Objectively speaking, it's an unbelievable success case. I had no funding to start. We had no funding to start other than Lane's personal money to purchase the property and do some of the renovations.
Uh-huh.
And to have the growth rate we've had, to go from zero revenue to 30,000 in revenue to 100,000 in revenue to 150,000 in revenue. Without any donations and grants, that's the greatest success story in business that you can have for small business.
And you, have you So you're not at the place where you're turning people away yet. Like, we don't have any room
at
the
end.
No,
we're not at capacity.
Okay. So that's a good thing. But you're going to be at some point as you grow.
So I have a model for the for that property that shows how much it's making in revenue at capacity, how many people are working there full time, and then that underwrites that property's sustainability from its own functioning, and hopefully all of the grants and the donations and everything else we get on top of that, we use to underwrite free programs or to purchase more property to do the same thing with.
Wow. So what's the political climate in Hamden? Is everybody on board?
There's a lot of people who are on board, and there's always been some people who can see the mistakes we make and don't like them and talk about them, which I appreciate and learn from and mm-hmm. try to rectify the mistakes I've made.
What's the mistake? Give me a mistake.
A mistake is how do we deal with the increase in parking needs in the neighborhood effectively?
But parking is a problem everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know any place, any exciting place has a problem with parking.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah, it's absolutely true.
The and boring I feel places that. Don't that. Have a problem with parking because nobody's there. So parking problems denote vibrancy.
Yeah, so I need you to explain that to my neighbors. But I also appreciate their concerns, and I need to actually meet them. Either do outreach to the neighborhood. So some of that has been like I've learned that I need to do more outreach.
But you have some parking.
We do. We have 40 spots.
Because it was a church.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's like 150 in the neighborhood, but you know, when like 400 people or 1,000 people show up to an all-day festival, and that fills up every single spot for a mile around.
Listen. Well, you know what? Maybe you have an open house and invite the neighbors in on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So they can see the good work that you're doing, so they don't mind when they come home and they can't park in front of their house on a given night because there's some event.
Yeah. When I get my first development director and they have strategy for community outreach and we get a little bit of extra funding through a grant that development director writes, that's going to sponsor those open houses.
That's all. I mean, you just have to, you know, listen, I've been at this a long time around these conversations around parking. When I was on the board of aldermen, man, people used to just gripe, you know, because the hospital, you know, encroaches on neighborhoods. Yale encroaches on neighborhood. So there's a lot of encroachment on neighborhoods.
Yeah.
But, you know, as I think about this, if you are a vibrant, cool place, people want to flock to it. And parking is going to be an issue. And you'll never have enough parking for all the cool stuff that happens in community.
Right.
You just won't. So there's no way around that. So
we just need to ride more bikes.
Right. Are you a biker?
I have been a biker at different points. Right now I live so close to where I work, I can either walk or I need to use the car.
So you live in Hamden?
I do. I live a block away.
I was trying to woo you at the dinner party. I was trying to woo you to New Haven. I don't know why I'm wooing people to New Haven. Because I guess because I like the young vibrancy people to come and be a part of that community.
We need to think of all of Greater New Haven as New Haven.
Whoa!
We need to think regionally again. Like, because there's not going to be enough housing in New Haven itself to sustain the level of community that we have.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah.
That is the truth. So, and affordable housing is a big deal.
It's a huge deal. And it's all going to be located in East Haven and West Haven and Hamden and probably even like North Haven and Woodbridge at some point once we get that big.
All right. So, Robert, what do you do for fun?
I go to dinner parties.
Okay, so there's a picture of Robert and I on Instagram and Facebook. And he's like my mystery guy, right? And do you know people were really inquiring about who you were.
Ooh.
And who you were in relationship to me.
Oh, man.
I said, you know, Robert, people are going to talk about us.
You did
say
that.
So, and people have. It was kind of cute.
Oh,
it was kind of cute.
I appreciate it. That's flattering.
It was kind of cute. I was like, yeah. It's like, no. So really, what do you do for fun? What's your activity? Like, what do you do for fun? How do you take care of yourself? How do you pull yourself away from the grind of things?
I don't do enough self-care lately. I used to, so I love to dance.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Dance parties, like just totally ecstatic, joyful, all night dancing where there's nothing but the music and everyone's drenched in sweat. That's the best thing I could possibly imagine.
I have to keep you in mind. You know, there's dance parties all over this little town.
Oh, yeah,
there's some good dance parties going on. I have a friend of mine, Julio, who DJs at the back room at Rudy's.
Nice.
And they do, I think, Saturday nights. They have a dance party. Like,
that's
starts
right.
at like 10 o'clock. You know, for old ladies like me, I'm like, I'll get there at 10. I'm gone by 11:30. I can't roll like that anymore. So, yeah. So, you like dance parties. What else? Are you cooking? Do you cook for pleasure?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Probably once a month.
Really?
Yeah.
I would have thought you would cook more.
Yeah, my partner is doing an internship in South Dakota right now. So most of the time I would cook for her to make her happy.
When is she back? When is she coming back?
She's coming back at the end of February.
So yay!
She'll be back in March, yeah.
Okay. And so now what is she studying?
She's been working at a women's health and resource center on the Yankton Sioux Reservation.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, which has been one of the most traumatized reservations in the nation.
Are they all?
They are all.
They all are.
Yeah. But this one, there was a very powerful political activist out of the reservations who started this women's resource center to meet the needs of her people, her women. And Sharon's last name is going to escape me off the top of my head, is that woman at the Yankton Sioux Reservation. And Talisa, my partner, went there specifically to see how she met the needs of her people and is meeting them.
Wow.
With this resource center.
You know, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Oh, thanks, Babs.
You have to come back, and we have to have more conversations around any one of these things that we broached. And people are listening to us and watching us. And hey, Seth Poole and Becca. Oh, hi, Talisa.
Hey, Talisa's here too.
She's here. She's
yeah.
Sharon Astoyer.
There we go.
Astoyer. Yeah, Astoyer. Hi, Talisa. So I've
Hello,
enjoyed
everyone.
Talking to Robert. So it has been my pleasure talking to you.
It's been my pleasure.
I'm coming over and touring the Whitney Center.
Please.
The Commons, Whitneyville Cultural Commons. I'm going to come hang out and see where I could like support it. And definitely want to see you around town a little bit more.
Yeah, I have to get more of a social life again. I work 60 to 80 hours a week.
Listen, I know. I feel everything about that. But you gotta carve out some time for fun because, you know, this is all work and it'll be here. It'll all be there tomorrow. So, so Harry, you going to play us out? Do I need to do that? Harry's going to play us out. And thank you.
Thanks, Babs.
I so enjoyed this.
Me too.
Hey! Yeah.
wheels keep spinning, wheels keep spinning, wheels keep spinning to the morning light. Wheels keep spinning, wheels keep spinning, wheels keep spinning to the morning light. Wheels keep spinning, wheels keep spinning, wheels keep spinning to the morning light. Spinning to the morning light.